Nancy Pelosi says William Barr committed a crime and accuses him of lying to Congress.
Nobody is above the law, not the President of the United States and not the Attorney General.
So can Democrats punish the AG?
I'm Rachel Martin with David Greene, and it's up first from NPR News. The CEO of a major drug company has been convicted in a high-profile case linked to the opioid epidemic. The company bribed doctors to boost the sale of the drug fentanyl. Those who got addicted hope it's a transformative case.
If this doesn't wake up the pharmaceutical companies, I don't know what will.
Does this case set a precedent?
And Syrian and Russian airstrikes target one of the last rebel-held areas in Syria. The towns hit were supposedly demilitarized following an agreement between Russia and Turkey. So could this destabilize the region? Stay with us. We have the news you need to start your day.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from SimpliSafe Home Security. Their completely wireless system was built to protect every point of access to your home with no long-term contracts. Get free shipping and a 60-day money-back guarantee today at simplisafe.com/upfirst. Support also comes from the Platinum Card from American Express. Platinum enhances life's moments, both big and small, so that you can live life to the fullest. Don't live life without it.
Attorney General William Barr skipped a House hearing yesterday, the very same day Democrats accused him of breaking the law. That's a serious accusation that requires some context.
Right. So back in April, William Barr went before a House Appropriations Committee, and he was questioned by Democratic Congressman Charlie Crist about the four-page summary that he wrote of the Mueller report.
Reports have emerged recently, General, that members of the special counsel's team are frustrated at some level with the limited information included in your March 24th letter, that it does not adequately or accurately necessarily portray the report's findings. Do you know what they're referencing with that?
No, I don't. I suspect that they probably wanted, more put out.
Well, now it's come to light this week that Robert Mueller had, in fact, sent the attorney general a letter prior to that hearing expressing his frustration with the summary and wanting more context. So yesterday, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said this of William Barr.
The attorney general of the United States of America was not telling the truth to the Congress of the United States. That's a crime.
For its part, the Justice Department said that Speaker Pelosi's attack is, quote, reckless, irresponsible, and false, end quote.
All right. One person following all of this, NPR congressional correspondent Kelsey Snell, who joins us. Hi, Kelsey.
Hey there. Good morning.
Okay. So the Speaker of the House accusing the Attorney General of lying and committing a crime. This whole back and forth is coming to a whole new place now.
Yeah, the tension is absolutely ramping up. The comments from Pelosi kind of set the tone for how Democrats are approaching Barr now, and it really does signal a new phase of this confrontation with the Department of Justice. Democrats say a moment of accountability is coming, and they are really, really walking a tight line between wanting to demonstrate that they can be tough and trying to take a slow and deliberate approach to asking for information from the Department of Justice and from the administration, because they really want to maintain credibility with the investigations that they're hoping to continue for many years to come. I mean, they are making this a very public show. They're making demands, including the one from the Judiciary Committee, Chairman Jerry Nadler, for that unredacted version of the Mueller report. And they're really just kind of setting terms right now. This is all very procedural, but it's moving from the rhetorical space into one where there's a possibility of charges of contempt. And Pelosi's comments about Barr committing a crime are really, really big steps towards that kind of serious confrontation with the White House.
Well, and this all, I mean, these accusations against the Attorney General come as Barr refused to appear in the House Judiciary Committee yesterday. I mean, there was that empty chair we all saw on television. What exactly played out there?
Yeah, things fell apart because Democrats tried to set terms, including a request for a possible closed-door session to question Barr. You know, the implosion yesterday was all about sending a message that the administration is not going to dictate the terms of the House process. Democrats also wanted the option of letting committee lawyers ask some of the questions at this hearing, and Barr just said no. Jerry Nadler said that he made a good faith effort to negotiate with the Department of Justice, and, you know, they're making it very clear that they're going to continue on whether or not the administration wants to comply. Now, the hearing was a bit of a stunt, and they just wanted to make a point that Barr didn't show up. And you had a Democrat eating a bucket of chicken to kind of mock him for not appearing. And, you know, Republicans say that it was a spectacle hearing and that it kind of undermined any appearance that Democrats are being apolitical about this. But, you know, they're right. There is no avoiding politics in this. Democrats have a base of their own, and the polling says that Democrats, by and large, want impeachment. So they're trying to figure out this tight line between fulfilling that and, you know, appealing to the rest of the country and making sure that this appears to be a real investigation.
So as they try to strike that balance, what are we looking for to happen next?
Yeah, the subpoenas, we are waiting. The president says he'll fight any congressional investigation. And, you know, that kind of sets up a showdown over who will comply and who will fight. Nadler gave DOJ a couple of days to send over the unredacted report we've been talking about. So this is very likely to continue playing out next week.
And NPR's Kelsey Snell. Thanks, Kelsey.
You're welcome.
All right, John Kapoor is the founder of the pharmaceutical firm Insys Therapeutics. His company developed a prescription fentanyl spray, a product that boosted the profits of a corporation that had made him a billionaire.
Yeah, and now Kapoor is facing up to 20 years in prison. He was found guilty yesterday in a Boston courtroom, along with four of his colleagues, of conspiring to bribe doctors to prescribe fentanyl, which is a highly addictive drug. Significantly, it marked the first time any CEO from a pharmaceutical company has been convicted in a case linked to the country's opioid crisis.
And we're joined now by Gabriella Emanuel of member station WGBH in Boston. She's been following this for us. Hi, Gabriella.
Hi there.
So explain a little bit more about what exactly this CEO and these individuals were convicted of doing here.
The prosecutors argued that these executives oversaw a nationwide scheme to boost sales of their very addictive opioid painkiller. And you can think about this scheme in three steps. First, they targeted doctors who were known to prescribe opioids, overprescribe opioids. The head of sales from Insys Therapeutics, who pleaded guilty and testified for the prosecution, said they ran toward pill mills, not away from them. So to Insys Therapeutics, he said pill mills meant dollar signs. The next step was bribing these doctors to write prescriptions. Often that meant prescribing really strong opioids to patients who did not necessarily need it. They had a sham speakers program, where doctors were paid not to give lectures, but to write prescriptions. And finally, they set up a whole call center where Insys employees deceived insurance companies, saying whatever was necessary to get their expensive medication paid for. They even fabricated cancer diagnoses.
Wow. I mean, I don't want to extrapolate too much from one company and one drug, but it feels like this trial might be giving us a real window into the opioid crisis.
Yes, that's absolutely right. So this company did things that we now know other companies also did in an effort to kind of fuel sales of their drug, and that spread the opioid epidemic. For example, Insys sales reps were paid higher bonuses when they convinced doctors to write prescriptions in higher doses. The idea was get patients hooked and keep them coming back for more. They even made a music video about it. Here's a clip. We not up for discussion, we'll arrange to get a speaker you can meet with over supper. We can come into your office, we can go and bring some lunch, and while your staff is getting fair, we can start discussing substance. Yes, Lord. Things actually got even crazier. Huh. They hired a former exotic dancer who to be part of their sales team, and she was actually one of the defendants who was found guilty yesterday in trial. She gave a lap dance to a doctor to try and convince him to prescribe their opioid medication.
Well, I just want to ask you, I mean, you had the chance to speak with some of the patients who were actually impacted by this scheme after the conviction. I mean, what did they tell you, and what are the implications of this trial moving forward now? What are they hoping for?
The implications are huge. This was a criminal case. Often we see pharmaceutical companies facing civil cases. That means fines. But here, a criminal case means potentially prison time. These executives here face up to 20 years behind bars. All of this taken together represents an aggressive strategy by the federal government to go after pharmaceutical companies for their role in fueling the opioid epidemic. And with this victory in hand, experts say this could be the beginning of a trend, and this case could be a blueprint for future prosecutions.
All right, that's Gabriella Emanuel of member station WGBH. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
All right, Government forces have been bombarding one of the last rebel-held areas in Syria.
Witnesses say that Syrian and Russian airstrikes have hit hospitals, schools, civilians' homes. This is happening in what had been set aside as a buffer zone between Turkish and Russian-controlled areas in Syria. And it comes as there are supposed to be these peace talks in Geneva that would include representatives from the United States.
Right, let's turn to NPR's Ruth Sherlock, who is in Beirut. And Ruth, it doesn't sound like this is a buffer zone anymore. This is Syria's Idlib province. What's happening?
Right. Well, this is, importantly, the last main part of Syria that's controlled by rebel opponents of Bashar al-Assad. So, you know, the regime has won back a lot of the country in the last few years, and now they seem to be focusing on this area. And there's a huge amount at stake here. You know, it's a place that's swollen with civilians. And so for a long time, it's been essentially a last refuge for people who fled other parts of the country. And aid workers are saying this could be a catastrophe if a full war takes hold.
What are we hearing about these strikes and how bad they've been in terms of civilians and how they're being impacted?
Well, we're hearing reports of an intense onslaught. You know, there's bombardment, airstrikes and barrel bombs. That's these crude TNT barrels that are full of explosives, And they're being, although there is fighting happening on the front lines, it seems that a lot of these are being also dropped in civilian neighborhoods. We spoke to one rescue worker who said that a kindergarten had been destroyed, where there were reports of hospitals hit. And we also spoke to a doctor, we're calling him just by his first name, Ahmed, for his safety. And he's from the charity Hand in Hand.
صباح اليوم لحتى هلا ما عم تفضى ابدا بالطيران الروسي، يعني عم تتواجد في السماء مرات اربع طيارات خمس طيارات مع بعض.
So here he's saying the skies are never empty these days, with there's planes and helicopters firing missiles and barrels. And he says yesterday in one village, a family died leaving behind this one little girl. You know, he's seen so much death over the last few years, and he's saying the international community only cares about numbers and not names. So he sent me a photograph of the family that died and told me to look at the little girl who's now an orphan. She looked about no older than three.
Wow. Well, I mean, and yeah. This was supposed to be a buffer zone, right? I mean, this was supposed to be a relatively safe place all sides had agreed upon. What does it tell us that has just ended?
Well, that's right. So Turkey was concerned that the millions of people living in this area would try to flood across this border if a full war took place. So it struck this deal in September with the Syrian regime's ally, Russia, and they were meant to try to keep the peace there. They're actually meant to be starting joint patrols in May. But both Turkey and Russia seem to be having difficulty convincing their respective sides, that's the rebels and the regime, to let this happen.
Are there more talks coming that could bring some peace to this place?
Well, there are talks in Geneva on Friday with seven countries, including the US. But, you know, historically, these talks in Geneva have not come to a lot. And it's clear that each side is trying to gain as much ground as they can in this area ahead of the talks.
NPR's Ruth Sherlock for us in Beirut, covering that situation in that region in Syria. Ruth, thanks so much.
Thank you.
All right, it's a wrap for this week, everyone. That is up first for Friday, May 3rd. I'm David Green.
And I'm Rachel Martin. Our producer is Bo Hamby. Our editors are William Jones and Eric McDaniel. Our social strategist is Laura Roman. Kenya Young is the executive producer of Up First. Come back Monday. We'll be here. We can do it. And because the news doesn't stop when the podcast ends, follow us on Twitter. We are at Up First. There you will find your daily roundup of the most important stories of the day.
And one thing we want to leave you with before the weekend, just a big reminder, a really important reminder that Up First is here each morning because of your NPR station. Your financial support lets us do more things just like this show. Support your NPR station right now by going to donate.npr.org. And we hope you start your weekend with NPR's Weekend Edition. You can find that program tomorrow morning on your local station. And you can find your local station by visiting stations.npr.org. Have a great weekend.
Weight can be a thorny topic. But LifeKit is here to give you the facts.
The scale measures the gravitational pull of the Earth at a given moment in time. The scale doesn't measure health, happiness, success, effort, or self-worth.
Here at LifeKit, we're rethinking weight. Find it wherever you're listening or at npr.org/LifeKit.